Hello, and welcome to the Clinical Care Options Infectious Disease Podcast. I'm your host, Tiffany Hensley McBain. Today's episode is part of an ongoing series on addressing misunderstandings and applying HBV treatment guidelines. This series features brief conversations between a physician and a patient in which they discuss ways to collaborate in care and reach shared decisions, often describing their own experiences. In this episode, Dr. Jordan Feld from the University of Toronto and the Toronto Center for Liver Disease has a conversation with Wendy, who is living with chronic hepatitis B, on the challenges of determining the best time to start treatment. For more information about Dr. Feld and for a link to additional online education on this topic and more, please visit the link in the show notes. So hello, Dr. Feld and Wendy. Thank you for joining me today. I'm going to start by turning it over to Wendy to describe her hepatitis diagnosis and share how her care has evolved since that time.
So I was diagnosed with chronic hepatitis B when I was in university in the mid-1980s. At the time, I knew very little about the disease. This was before the internet existed. I knew that I had acquired it at birth from my mom and that it was infectious, so I needed to make sure that those close to me were protected. So after my fiancé found out he had the antibodies, I didn't make any changes to my lifestyle. I was not monitored for any progressive liver disease, and I continued to have the occasional glass of wine. Then my mom was diagnosed with inoperable liver cancer, or HCC, in 1998. My whole family was pretty shocked by the diagnosis. We had not been informed that hepatitis B led to a higher risk of liver cancer. In fact, my mom had only received one abdominal ultrasound in her lifetime, and that was when she found out she had HCC. She also did not have her liver enzymes or her alpha fetoprotein checked. When she did have a blood test after her diagnosis, her numbers were extremely elevated, above the upper limit normal. She was prescribed lamivudine, which was the only antiviral medication available at that time. It was way too late, though, to reverse the liver damage. Despite the dire prognosis, my mom decided to receive chemotherapy as a desperate attempt to prolong her life. Sadly, this treatment only made her last few months on Earth miserable, and she died soon after. Even though I was devastated by my mom's death, it was a wake-up call for me to take hepatitis B more seriously. I began to receive regular blood tests to monitor my liver function and enzyme levels. As well, I had abdominal ultrasounds twice a year, and more recently, FibroScans of my liver. At the time, my hepatologist said I was still in the immune tolerant phase of the disease, since I had a very high viral load and relatively normal liver enzyme levels. FibroScan of my liver showed that I did not have any scarring. Because of these test results, my specialist said that I did not need to be on antivirals, despite my family's history and already being in my mid-50s. Nevertheless, I began researching different guidelines about hepatitis B treatment. Most did seem to indicate that I should not be on treatment. Even though I was older, I was still E antigen positive, and I had a family history of HCC. It really did make me feel kind of uncomfortable to not be on treatment, but I accepted it after getting a second opinion from another hepatologist that I respected.
Yeah, that's a tricky situation. Well, thanks for sharing your story, Wendy. I'm sorry about your mother's experience. That's obviously very difficult for your whole family. And I can imagine that was not the way you wanted to get that wake-up call and then having all of this uncertainty. And, you know, I often say to people, you never want to be interesting in medicine where the doctors say, I haven't seen something like this. I'm not quite sure what to do. You want to be very like everybody else where we've seen it 1,000 times and know exactly what the best way to manage it is. And I think this is tricky, and I can understand that uncertainty has been difficult for you. And I would certainly say in the management of hepatitis B, it's challenging. It's a dynamic condition where things change over time. And so seeing person on an individual at an individual time is never enough for us to figure out what the right way to manage someone is. And then, as you've experienced, there are times when even the guidelines don't agree. You can look at European guidelines, American guidelines, Canadian guidelines, and you may find slightly different opinions about what to do for very small groups of people. And you unfortunately fall into one of those categories where this prolonged period of the immune tolerant, so-called immune tolerant state. And, you know, it is a tricky one where treatment is certainly, we want to provide treatment to people when we know it's going to be helpful. And this is an area where I think there's been a bit of a change in feeling over the last number of years, where we recognize that as people get older, even if they stay in this state of so-called immune tolerance where the virus levels are high, but there doesn't there's not a lot of ongoing liver damage, that as people get older, there may be some value in thinking about treatment because, as unfortunately you learned with your mother, this state is associated with a bit of a higher risk of cancer. And for sure, the most important thing is that you're getting the surveillance. And I can understand that question of, you know, you want to do something about it. So this sort of feeling like, I should be on treatment so I can be helpful. What was the conversation like with the hepatologist that you saw in the, as you sort of went through those discussions about should I start or should I not start?
At first, because of my research, I kept thinking, well, I had some siblings who had already started on entecavir, and they seemed to be doing well on it, and the viral load was going down, their liver enzyme levels were stabilizing. And I thought, well, shouldn't I go on it? And he kept saying no, because there's a possibility that you will build up resistance if you're not taking it at the correct time. So it did make me apprehensive, but he did reassure me many times. And I saw him quite regularly, at least once a year. And each time he would say, nope, not yet. Look at your numbers. Your numbers are fine. And he had a spreadsheet on it. And so at least I appreciate the vigilance that he did with my care. But it did make me nervous. And yet, again, like you said, I looked at the guidelines and I thought, yes, there's some ambiguity here. But on the other hand, it did seem to make sense that I'd not be on treatment.
Yeah, I think it was good that you went and got a second opinion. You know, I think sometimes people are reluctant to do that. They sort of want to say, well, my doctor knows best. But, especially when there is uncertainty, and I mean, good on you for doing some reading and seeing where there is some uncertainty and getting a second opinion. And then certainly that's nice when you got a reassuring second opinion where you said the hepatologist that you were comfortable with and got the same response. And sometimes you'll get a differing opinion. And certainly there are areas where there's uncertainty in medicine. And this is why I would say that the tide is shifting a little bit, that people, there is a bit more feeling about treating people, particularly as they get older and stay in this immune tolerant phase, which for most people ends in their teens or 20s, and in some people persists into their 30s, 40s, and 50s. And I think there is a sense that maybe treating earlier. And you know, I always say to people when I see people in that fit that description, I'm sort of looking for an excuse to treat them. So if it's their liver tests go up a little bit, that might lead me to pull the trigger and a discussion. And I think your family history is certainly something that might sway some providers to recommend treatment.
Last year, my ALT started to elevate to 2 times the normal. So I started on entecavir and then Vemlidy or TAF. I was actually relieved to begin treatment. But unfortunately, soon after starting medication, I developed chronic urticaria, or skin rash, which seems to be an autoimmune condition because my allergist surmises that perhaps my body has been so busy fighting the Hep B virus that after my viral load went down, my immune system was still reactive. Regardless of the cause, though, it has a huge impact on my quality of life. I wonder if I didn't start treatment, whether or not I would have been able to avoid this uncomfortable condition.
And so how are you feeling about it now with this, you know, this unfortunate situation with the urticaria? I mean, it's hard to know whether it actually is related or not. Was that the reason you switched treatment? I'm curious, from the entecavir
to the... Yes, that is why, because I had a severe reaction with the entecavir. And so I thought it was attributed to that. So I asked my doctor to go on to TAF, and he said, fine, try it. And I had the same reaction. So he said it's probably not the medication if both antivirals were causing that. But it most like that's why what the allergist said to me made sense that, oh, okay, well, my immune system has been fighting this virus for such a long time. And then the viral load went down. And so probably the immune system continued to start to fight whatever foreign body was in it or thought was in it. And so it caused this potential reaction. So yeah, sometimes I thought, oh, maybe I should have just kept monitoring my ALT a few more times. And if it's, you know, maybe it would have gone down just a flare up and then I wouldn't have had to be on this medication because now I'm on prescription antihistamines as well.
I think that does speak to sort of, you know, one of the challenges of when we say that is the decision about treatment in hepatitis B is, you know, before I recommend treatment to someone, I I am really carefully thinking about not the treatment for today or next week, but really that this is very likely is going to be a long-term treatment because our current therapies are very rarely curative. So it means that people are taking them usually for many years, if not lifelong. And so that, you know, as people go through different stages of life, when they're comfortable with being on medications, and you want to make sure that if someone starts, that they're going to be able to be able to take it, so be adherent with the therapy, and that they're going to be able to tolerate it well and take it long term. And so that's one of the other arguments about with this, again, this sort of uncertainty around immune tolerance is whether these are people that are probably going to need to take it for a very long time. They're often relatively young when they're first diagnosed. And then you are sort of saying to them, do you really want to go on this treatment for 20 years that we don't know if it's going to help you? I mean, we like to believe that doing something, that intervening is going to help. And what I do know is it's going to bring your virus level down. What I don't know is whether or not that's going to change your risk of developing any consequences. And I think the key point about that is if you decide not to go for treatment is that you've got to be doing the vigilant monitoring. And I'm glad to hear that you were getting that follow-up of making sure that your liver tests, your virus levels, the ultrasounds were being done. And then provided that's done, I think, you know, if you ask four hepatologists, you get five answers about whether or not you should be on treatment at any different time in this natural history. And then it's definitely a tricky question to know whether this has anything to do with the urticaria. I can imagine that's very troubling and frustrating. So it's it's very uncommon to develop skin reactions or allergies and certainly chronic urticaria from chronic hepatitis B therapy with the antivirals that you've taken either entecavir or TAF. You know, with almost any medicine, it's possible to have skin reactions. And I certainly have very occasionally seen it with the nucleoside analogs. And then, you know, the fact that it's persisted despite switching, and I think the allergist raises an interesting question. Certainly urticaria is occasionally associated with chronic hepatitis B. So there's a slightly higher burden of this condition in people with chronic hepatitis B. And it's obviously hard to ignore the timing, the fact that you started treatment that you hadn't had for 50 odd years, and then suddenly this pops out. So it's hard to ignore the timing of that. On the flip side, I think our brains are very, we always want to have a cause and effect for everything. And they're not always, they can be true and unrelated, that the things may not be related. And then I think it does sort of highlight the challenges of, you know, you make a decision one way or the other, and it seems like it's going to be the obvious right thing. Why don't they want to put me on treatment? I go on treatment, and now you're saying, maybe that wasn't the best thought. And, you know, hard to know whether what was the right, what's wisdom here. But that's challenging.
I certainly appreciate those reflections. I'm just curious as well, have you seen that with other patients, maybe perhaps not your own, but maybe they've come to you and they were put on treatment when maybe it wasn't the right time to start, or they didn't need to be on, or they should have been on treatment and they weren't? I'm just curious if you've seen those type of cases.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that where people have come with, you know, that whether they've been advised to be on treatment where, and it is actually, it's an interesting scenario where sometimes we see someone who is on treatment and we say, I wonder, you know, they come to me on treatment and I don't have that hindsight to know, was the indication for the treatment a good one? And then if there's a problem with their therapy or something else, or, you know, people have run into complications from the treatment or something, can we stop it? And you really want to know, did they need it in the first place? And that can be a tricky thing to figure out, to go back and get old records and try to understand that. And then to know, well, okay, even if they didn't need it, now that they've started it, does that change the situation if I stop the medicine now? And that's why, I mean, I think whenever you're having these discussions, it's nice to have people like you that are reading about it and have learned about the condition. And then we can have a really good conversation about saying, well, look, these are the pros and cons. We can stop the treatment that you started. These are the risks of that. And if we're going to do that, we certainly got to monitor you carefully, because when we do that, people can have a big flare. And so we've got to be careful. On the flip side, we might say, well, now that you've started, we don't want to have that risk of a flare. So we're going to continue to just go along with it. And I think that's where really this should be shared decision making. We're going to provide you with some information. And at the end of the day, this is going to be a decision that we make together about whether treatment is the right thing and in some scenarios, whether stopping treatment is the right thing, which in your case, I would not recommend, just to be clear. but there might be scenarios where we do consider stopping treatment. And when we have that discussion, we really, again, just as the discussion about starting, we're going to discuss all the risks and benefits of stopping.
Yes, that's a good point. When I agree with you as far as that patients should really try to educate themselves about their disease so that they can be their own advocate. I think that I did a lot of research through the Hep B Foundation, and it was very useful to also connect with other people. Like there's a hepatitis B list, email list, which is now being discontinued and is now called hepcommunity.org. And there's a lot of questions that people were asking and answers that were reflected back to them by some experts. So I think it's just really important to keep educated about your condition so that you can talk to your doctor in a reasonable way to say whether or not you think that you should or shouldn't start treatment and what their opinion is, so that you could have more of a dialogue.
And I just want to thank you again for talking about it, Wendy, because so few people are comfortable talking about the diagnosis in the first place, because you tell this story, which is we see so commonly where people had hepatitis B for years or even decades, and the only way they found out that it needed management was because something bad happened to someone. I mean, the story that you're telling me, unfortunately, I've heard before of a family member having a bad outcome, and that's what led to someone requiring or getting the care that they needed and the follow-up. And I guess it just really, again, speaks to the under-recognition and sometimes the unfortunate, the stigma that's associated with hepatitis B, that people are concerned about mentioning it. They don't want to talk about it publicly. They don't want to mention it outside the family or whatever. And so, you know, thanks again for speaking publicly about it, because I do think that this normalizes it for people. They realize that this has nothing, no fault of anyone's, that you have this infection. And the main thing to do is to manage it properly. And the first part of management is making the diagnosis. So making sure that people who are at risk from where they come from whatever activities they've been involved in, from what they work in, whatever they do, that they make sure that they get tested. And then if they do have the condition, that the good thing is that fortunately for many people, if it's found early, hepatitis B can really be managed well, and we can prevent many or all of it.
Yes, excellent point. I agree.
Well, thank you again, Wendy, for sharing your story, and Dr. Feld for participating in this discussion. And thanks to our listeners for joining us. As a reminder, if you would like to view short presentations on additional topics related to the care of hepatitis B, I invite you to visit the Clinical Care Options website by clicking on the link in the show notes. And please be sure to check back regularly for more episodes on important infectious disease topics. Thanks!